Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, I want to start out with a little bit of good news, because it wasn't a landmark week for Baylor sports, but the softball team did beat number one Oklahoma. So let's give a cheer for that.
Wasn't that kind of cool? Yeah, wasn't that kind of cool that they did that on Sunday? And, I mean, and it probably came at the right time, too, for as difficult as the weekend was for Baylor and just about everything. Baseball team lost 2 out of 3 in its season opening series. Of course, the basketball team had the rough game at Kansas. Basketball team, the women's team, you know, blew another game at home late against Iowa State that went into double overtime. And so, well, all those things that were going on, it was, you know, that was kind of the little pick-me-up that Baylor's community needed.
Was kind of nice. Now, Baylor is going into Baylor has Texas coming in this weekend, and this doesn't seem like the ideal time for it, because Texas looks like they're getting their stride back, and I don't know what happened to Baylor in the last 2 second halves.
Well, I know what happened to them. Their defense is terrible, and I think that's really what the biggest problem with this team is. I think I heard something last night. I looked at it briefly, but I didn't get a chance to look at it in great detail. But I think statistically, Baylor is the worst defensive team in the Big 12 right now. And it shows. I mean, if you saw the second halves in Lawrence and Manhattan basically were carbon copies, where guys are driving the lane or cutting on the baseline without anyone cutting them off, much less protecting the rim, and they're getting high percentage looks. I mean, point blank looks, let's be honest about this. And this is where Baylor's defense, you know, as good as it was, you know, during those back-to-back, and really you can include the COVID year too, those 3 years where their defense was good. And remember how we talked about that defense during that stretch run, where how they called Davion Mitchell the tip of the spear, and Davion really was. I mean, he was the guy who set the tone defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not have anyone on that team right now that sets the tone defensively for that team. It certainly isn't Keontae George, who probably might be the worst defender on the team right now. Great offensive player. I want him to have the ball at the end of the game if it's close. But, man, if you're asking him to try and get a stop, try and find somebody else, because that's not happening. But anyway, you know, the problem is with this team is that they are not stopping anybody. And when you allow – let's look at it this way. When you allow a team like Kansas State to shoot basically 58% in the second half, despite going 1 of 9 from 3-point line, that's a problem. I mean, those two shooting numbers don't mutually exist very well. That doesn't happen often, I guess is what I'm saying. But that also tells you why they can't get anything going and make stops, because they just, when they were trying to make it close, Stephen, you know, I remember when Scott Drew called this timeout. They were down 49-43 with 12:20 to go. And K-State had just made it, you know, had just kind of gone on that little surge. And Scott was trying to cut off the tie, and it just didn't work. And then you saw it just getting worse and worse and worse. It got to as many as 14. And, you know, at no time in the last 3 minutes, I tweeted out last night saying when they were down, what was it, like 69-60 with about 3 at the end of 4 timeout.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted out saying they're basically going to have to try and pitch a shutout in order to try and come back and win this thing. And that didn't happen. And the thing that was so frustrating about the way it ended was, in a couple of those matters, in a couple of those items, they just could not get anyone to stop. I mean, Kansas State would drain the shot clock like they should, you know, it's game management. But then they're finishing the possessions with high percentage looks. It's like, does anyone communicate with each other on this team? And so, you know, this Kansas week, for as good as the first half was at Kansas, and as good as maybe the first half was at Manhattan at Kansas State, these second half adjustments where Baylor's just getting picked apart around the basket is killing this team. And I think it's really much put them in a hole where I don't think they're going to win the Big 12, or at least share it, because they're 2 games out with 3 to play. They're 2 games behind Kansas and Texas. And even if they beat, Texas, you know, you've got to hope that Kansas come. You have to hope basically that Texas and Kansas come back to you a little bit. And you have, and Baylor has to win out is what they have to do in order to give them. They have to finish 12-6. That's the best they can hope for to have a chance, you know, and that's the way they have to look at it.
Baylor has been very Jekyll and Hyde. You look at the first half of that Kansas game, and Kansas didn't look like they belonged on the floor with them. Then you look at the second half of the Kansas game, and Baylor didn't look like they belonged on the same floor with Kansas. It looked like they changed uniforms at halftime.
You know, here's the one thing that I felt like when I watched that first half against Kansas. You know, Baylor was lights out. The guards were putting on a show. You know, Flagler was hot. Keontae was hot. L.J. Cryer was hot. I think they had 42 of the 45 in the first half. You know, and Keontae had this posterized dunk that was pretty sweet. And but if you think about it, Kansas was still getting, was still able to get to the rim. KJ Adams had every kind of look that he wanted, and he was getting, and they weren't finishing some of those. You know, he was having, instead of having some and ones, he was having to go to the line to shoot two, and that worked in Baylor's favor because he either missed one, missed them both, or if he did make them two, it was still kind of like not as authoritative, but they were still getting looks. And I don't know how much Kansas really changed its approach in the second half. They were just finishing. And that's really what it came down to, was them finishing, because Baylor wasn't stopping them really to any extent.
Now, I did see, and you know how gentle everyone on Twitter is. I did see a tweet on Twitter where one of the Baylor fans said that he would send NIL money to Flo Thamba to not play.
And
I don't know. You just haven't heard anything from Thamba, you know, recently at all.
No, and I think the one with, I think the issue with Flo is, this is kind of Flo outside of that stretch, you know, between last February, the day that Jonathan Chamwa Chachua went down with the devastating knee injury, to the end of the season. Basically, if you want to include the second round game against North Carolina, that's fine. But basically, that stretch where, like, Flo was, I think he was like 11-6. Those were his averages during that stretch, you know, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where he was really good. But then we're back to the same Flo. You know, and we can talk about Flo being on the floor, being the most winningest player in Baylor history. And I'm like, well, that's great. But he happened to be kind of like a guy who was there when this was all going down. And so God bless him, too, because Flo's been a faithful member to the program. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of great things in his time. And, of course, he has a national championship ring to show for it as well. So I take nothing away from him. But he's not that presence, I think, that Baylor was hoping that they were going to have, because he's 6'10". And when you hear last night, and you can see it for yourself, but when you hear Fran Fraschilla or anybody else, because I've heard, you know, other analysts say this too, that Baylor does not have a rim protector. They don't. And you do not have a guy that an enforcer down there on the block that's going to make shots difficult for guys, or, you know, who are driving. You know, he either blocks the shots or changes the shots, and Flo doesn't do that. And so, you know, like I said, Flo's done a lot of great things for the program. He's been a faithful soldier. There's nothing wrong with that. But the impact that he's made was, you know, but nothing's really different about him this year than really what we've seen throughout his career.
You know, one thing that has also changed, and, you know, okay, let's face it, these guys are not, they're going to make the tournament. They can have a run. But this week was not what they wanted it to be.
No. And that's the whole thing about the Big 12. This is such a brutal conference, Stephen. I mean, you know, you have Oklahoma State, which at one point ran off five straight, and now I think the Cowboys have lost their last three. You have Kansas, which went through a stretch where it lost three straight. Baylor was involved in that. That was back in January. And Baylor's had that to start the year, losing its first three, and then it loses its last two. Iowa State's gone through this. Kansas State went through this. And so TCU's been fighting it. You know, they just got Mike Miles back. But when he was out, they were really missing him. But even when Mike was playing, they were still, you know, they'd lost some games too. So this league just beats the entire bejeebers out of everybody. And, you know, it's a conference that can probably get eight teams into the NCAA tournament, maybe nine if Tech finishes strong. I think Oklahoma's really the odd, really not going to do anything to make the tournament. I think the Sooners are just too much up against it, and their conference record. I mean, I know what Joe Lenard is saying, but I think it would be really hard for the NCAA committee to justify trying to take Oklahoma unless the Sooners win the Big 12 tournament, you know, that sort of thing. But my point is that, you know, it's a conference, though, that is so – I think all the metrics and ratings and so forth, that the way that this conference is so tight, I think – I can't remember what the metric was, but it's like strength of schedule or just the power rankings, like the top one was 26 and the bottom one was 75, and that's just not something you've ever seen before because of how good this league is. And it should be. You've had three teams play for – either play for the national title or win it. Tech in 2019, Baylor 2021, Kansas 2022.
You remember a few years ago when you had Baylor basketball players that were going into the NFL as tight ends?
Mm-hmm.
There is not that guy on the team that, you know, I had talked about Mark Vidal,
right?
You know, the scrapper guy and everything like that. But Baylor, there were those guys. You were talking about the guy that protects the rims, but they had these guys that they couldn't just force you out of the way. You were scared to go up and try and go over them.
Yeah, I think, too, that, you know, we talked about this in a couple of podcasts ago that with Everyday John Back.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some hope that he might be that energy glue guy who gets the loose ball, gets that key rebound, or gets that key stop or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And while we've seen some really good things from John, you know, I've heard so many different percentages to say, well, what is he really back at percentage wise? And I've heard anywhere from 75 to 90. So it's kind of like flip a coin. What is he? I mean, he's back on the floor and he's fine, but he's not the effective guy that he was earlier. It's cool that he is making some threes, but they really don't need him out there on the arc. They really need him to step out there and be a guy that can be in the block and be a presence on that. And I just don't know if that would lend itself to be that right now. And I think maybe the expectations with John were that he could be that guy, but because of some of the caution that they're exercising with him, that maybe he can't do that right now. Could he do that later on in the Big 12 tournament, maybe the NCAA tournament? We'll just have to wait and see.
Okay, so on this game coming up with Texas, what kind of chances do you give Baylor? Because Texas has been looking pretty good lately.
Well, I mean, I would give Baylor a really good shot. I think they're going to be pretty darn angry about the way things went on the trip to Kansas and, you know, the state of Kansas. And, you know, and Texas is tied for first with Kansas, and Baylor would love to do nothing more than to beat them and knock them out of first. You know, the Longhorns have really been the only team in the Big 12 that has not suffered through this stretch of bad games. I mean, they've lost games here and there. Maybe they've lost back-to-back once, but, you know, that's a really good team that they put together, and credit to that Texas coaching staff for keeping things together in spite of the whole Chris Beard fiasco. That's pretty impressive on their part to do that. So, but the point is that I think Baylor will play a lot better. I think they will be locked in more defensively. I think they know they've got to be more locked in defensively. The game is a sellout, and they would love to do nothing more than to beat Texas. It'll be probably Texas's second to last appearance ever at the Farrell Center because, you know, obviously, as we know, Texas and OU are departing the Big 12 after this upcoming academic athletic calendar 23-24. They'll probably come back for the 23-24 season. But I think but there's that incentive to play well. And I think Baylor feels like it owes it to itself to play better. They know they're better than this, than what they played. They've just got, but, you know, life on the road in the conference is hard. And, you know, I've heard, you know, Stephen, you've heard me say this many times before, and it's not like I'm saying anything revolutionary, but it doesn't matter if you win at the last place team like in Norman or the first place team at Kansas or in Austin. When you win on the road in your conference, that's a really good win because everybody's against you except the people on your bench and maybe a couple of rows sitting right behind you, and that's it. And I think I actually think they're going to win the game, to be honest with you.
That would be kind of cool. All right, if we look a little bit at football, I think you said that you wanted to say a little bit more about Matt Pelage as the new DC.
Yeah, I think Matt Pelage will be, you know, I kind of like, you know, I've kind of read up a little bit more about him. Of course, he was here a year ago before he went over to Oregon to be their co-defensive coordinator. But I think with Matthew, I said this wrong, I think Baylor fans really need to enjoy him because I think he's a head coach in the making somewhere very soon. I really believe that. And My feeling here is with him is that I think you're going to see the Baylor secondary, which was in total shambles last year, going to be a lot better. And, you know, one thing I would like to think here is that there's going to be better communication. There's going to be better fundamentals. There's just going to be a lot of other things that are going to go. You know, Ronnie Wheat was not a good fit with the safeties. Okay. Now, Kevin Curtis still has the defensive backs, and that's fine. But, you know, when Matthew was here for that Sugar Bowl run team, those safeties were really locked in, engaged, you know, that sort of thing. And I think his presence there and the way he handles it and how aggressive they are and the way that they just read a quarterback's eyes and how good they are in run support, I think you're going to see a lot. I think you're going to see a big difference in the way that secondary plays this year. Now, there has been some discussion as to whether or not Baylor, you know, and it's all after the fact. It's all hindsight discussion. Should Baylor have stayed in a 3-4 throughout this year, or should it have flipped to a 4-3? Well, my only argument to that would have been, once you make the commitment to go to 3-4, it's really hard to flip defenses, even in fall camp, because spring ball is used to get your lineup set, to get, you know, get your base defense set up, your guys in position, get your rotation set, and all that other stuff. Fall practice is just basically making sure that you're refining everything. All the dirty work is made during spring ball. So I think the one thing that this group is going to have to look at is do they want to stick with a three-man front? Are they really considering a four-man front? Because they really don't have that Apu Ika type of guy in there. I mean, I think it will be interesting. I know that Kyan Roberts Day, the talented freshman that they brought in from Missouri, who didn't play much last year. I think he may have appeared in one or two games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was a running back last year. I know that there's the expectation that he's going to probably flip to the defense, which is probably the better spot for him. And he might be like that jack position, which is kind of like that guy that can be the edge rusher, but that outside linebacker, kind of like what Matt Jones was doing last year. But you get that athleticism out there. You know, a guy like Jackie Marshall can kind of fill that role as well in some respects. But I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what he wants to do with this defense and how do they want to look at the front. And, of course, we won't see this team until the 21st of March. But do we want to – but I think one of the interesting questions is do they want to stick with the three-man front or do they want to go to a four? And if they do, spring ball is the time to do it. I think that'll be one of the interesting storylines, simply because, as I said a few moments ago, I don't think they've got that nose tackle type of presence in there to do it.
They don't. I didn't think last year that they really had the personnel to go four down, but, you know, that was just my thoughts. But
no, I agree with you on that.
But isn't Aranda kind of married to the three-man front?
Yeah, that's been his bread and butter. I mean, that's what he's preached, you know, as long as he's been a defensive coordinator. But I think sometimes if you look at your personnel, and this is why you're spending January and February not only recruiting, but you're looking and you're going through offseason, but you're also breaking down a lot of things like, do we go to a four? And if we go, I mean, if you're going to make the commitment to switch, and there's going to be a justification for it, this is the time to do it. And so I think it'll be interesting to see. Again, this is total spitballing here, but I think that it's something that they would have to talk about and see if they really want to do it. Again, my personal feeling is that they don't have that big presence as a nose tackle. I don't think it would be a bad idea to go to a four, but, you know, we'll all wait and see. Now, again, if we're talking about the jack, and again, remember, you base out of a four, but sometimes the way Baylor lines up, sometimes they'll have five up front, just depending on the opponent, the down, the distance, the field position or whatever. But it's just basically how you base. And I think all we know is this, Stephen, is that they got to keep people out of the end zone, because this team gave up about 31 points in their last four games in November. And they got to be able to find a way to be a better run-stopping team, because that was one of the things that really hurt them toward the end of the season. They just got physically manhandled by Texas. The Texas game more than the Air Force game and the bowl game, because the Air Force game was what it was. But the Texas game was the thing that really, really struck a chord with me for how well, you know, as much as they were physical last year, the way they were just pushed all over the place against Texas really bothered me.
Yeah, particularly because Texas was not starting. That was not an all NCAA offensive line that Texas had.
No, they had some freshmen on there, but of course, the old adage, Stephen, is like, well, well, by the time it's like the basketball, it's like basketball when freshmen are playing and they get into February, you'll hear the commentators say, "Oh, he's not a freshman anymore. He's blah, blah, blah." And then it'll be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same way with freshmen during the football season. Once the calendar hits November, they've played about 8 games. Yeah, they're no longer freshmen if they're guys that are, significant contributors.
Yeah. All right. Now, I didn't even know who this guy was when you said you wanted to talk to him about the, Tyler Foster has been Baylor's recruiting coordinator, and he's not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a lot of the details on it, but I know he's no longer there. I know he was a guy that, came from Kansas State, was there for about a year. Things were in a situation where I think when Juice Johnson left to be the running backs coach with Joey over at Tech, I think there was some hope maybe that he would be the internal candidate. But, of course, that didn't happen. And, they got A.J. Seward from Oregon State, who's also the assistant head coach on this. And I think maybe for Foster that he probably was a guy that felt like, okay, well, if I'm not going to get the fair shot, maybe he felt like he didn't get a fair shot for the running backs job or whatnot. And if that was the case, then he said, okay, it's time to go. For some guys who want the opportunity to try and be a coach somewhere, they've obviously got to prove themselves. I kind of thought that with Foster, he was a guy that, he does what a lot of recruiting coordinators do. They're going to sell the brand. They're going to they're going to touch a lot of recruits, 2 or 3 years down the road, start planting the seeds of the relationship. If these are guys that Baylor is going to target, that sort of thing, they're kind of setting up the events and that sort of thing. But for some, maybe they want to aim higher. And I think in Foster's case, maybe he felt like, okay, I've kind of reached the ceiling here and maybe I need to do something else, or maybe I need to coach high school or something along those lines for him. And so now the recruiting kind of falls under the direction of Aaron Hunt and Larry McDonald, two guys that have been around the program for X number of years. Aaron's a guy that understands the Baylor culture because he's been there so long. I think he's been there maybe just a year or two longer than Larry. But I also feel like, that those guys are these guys are the behind the scenes guys. They are the ones that are going to make sure that the relationships are codified and that they can keep things going, because when coaches are busy breaking down film or doing whatever, these are the guys that kind of keep things networking going, whether it's with the recruits or the coaches of the recruits at the high school level or the JUCOs or whatever the case may be. I think in Foster's case, one of my major concerns with him that I noticed this during the season was on social media, and that was during the football season itself, is that he retweeted a lot and even would comment a lot on NFL games and not as much on Baylor stuff, which really kind of perplexed me and kind of concerned me from that perspective, and saying, man, I don't think you should really be. I mean, that's one thing to do it every now and then, but to do it routinely like he did kind of bothered me.
Okay, you want to close it out for us?
Okay, so full coverage of the Texas game Saturday afternoon. Heads up, I will not be covering this game, but we got a surprise for you for that game, and I'll make that known on Friday morning as to what that's going to be for that surprise for the coverage of the game. But Stephen is on track to be shooting that game on Saturday afternoon at the Ferrell Center, 1 o'clock. And then, of course, we'll keep you posted, of course, after Baylor, because Baylor's going to turn around and play Big Monday against Oklahoma State, I think at Oklahoma State on Monday. So it's going to be a quick turnaround for the Bears, and we're winding down to the last 3 games of the Big 12 season. Of course, we'll get you updates on recruits and what they think of Baylor from offers and that sort of thing. Posted a new slew of offers on Wednesday, so you might want to check those out. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.